Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio. Tech Talk, of course, your regular source of accessible technology interviews and product reviews from a blindness and partially sighted perspective. Tech Talk, of course, is your program and we'd really love to hear from you. So why not drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K @rnib.org.uk. Coming up this time, we'll be hearing from Colin Shales of RNIB's Technology for Life team, where he will be exploring the world of push-button mobile phones. We'll be speaking to a VI gamer, and Callum Stoneman will be along with a demonstration of the Sony Link Buds, and that's still to come on Tech Talk. Joining us, as ever, are our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad. Hello to you both. Welcome in. Good to have you with us. Tasneem, what are you looking forward to this week?
I am really looking forward to hearing about the visually impaired gaming.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure we'll be having a conversation about gaming a little bit later on. Callum Stoneman, can't wait to hear your piece with the Sony Link Buds. You're really into your audio stuff at the moment, it seems to me.
Yeah, a little bit. I love a nice, you know, pair of earphones or a good sounding speaker. And I love this product as well, as you'll hear later on, these Link Buds. I think they're really interesting.
Excellent. Well, we might get you to review a speaker as well, maybe in a week or two. So stay tuned. Tasneem, Callum, thanks very much. Strap yourself in. It's another RNIB Tech Talk.
Being able to use your smartphone while out and about is something that's become much more of a common requirement nowadays, whether that be for getting information from your GPS app, being able to quickly and easily make a phone call if you find yourself a bit lost, or even if you just want to enjoy a podcast or an audiobook or some music while you're out on a walk. But of course, the challenge for us is, how do we listen to all that information that we're getting from our devices, but also still be able to hear what's going on around us? Because of course, that is extremely important for orientation and for safety. We need to be able to hear the traffic noise and things like that. And there's been a few options to address this, the most popular one being the bone conduction headphones from Aftershocks. So these are headphones that will rest on your cheekbones, essentially, instead of being in your ears. They rest on your cheekbones and transmit the sound that way, so your ears are still free, so you can still hear all the traffic noise and all the other things that are going on around you, but you can also hear what's coming through the bone conduction headphones. More recently, there's been the Bose Frames, or the Anker Soundcore Frames, and they are like a regular pair of sunglasses, but in the arms of the glasses, they've got a little speaker that fires the sound into your ear. So again, your ears aren't blocked, but you can hear the sound coming from the arms of the glasses. And then the newest addition to, I guess, this market, if you like, are the Sony Link Buds, which I've recently got. And I just wanted to bring these to the table because I just think they're really interesting, because the other two solutions that I've mentioned, the Aftershocks headphones or the sunglasses type headphones, they don't go over your ears, and that's how they maintain that's how they allow you to maintain the ambient awareness. But what the Link Buds do is they do go in your ears, but they've got a hole through the middle of them that allows the natural sounds going on around you to still go into your ears. So the way these feel, As I'm sure you can imagine, it's quite a new design and in some ways quite a strange design. So the way the earbuds themselves actually feel is kind of hard to describe, but I'll do my best. So you've got at the very top of them, you've got a little rubber loop, and this tucks into the kind of fold at the top of your ears. So the rubber loop tucks in there and that holds the earbuds in place. Coming down from that, in kind of the center of the earbuds, so it would be the kind of central point of your ear, I guess, you've got a kind of dome shaped housing, and that is quite a natural place to grab the earbuds for taking them out. And that's also the place where you can do double tap and triple tap. So you can double and triple tap that little dome shaped housing to perform various actions. And I'll talk more about that later on. And then coming down from that, you have the small circle with a hole in the middle of it. And that bit goes on the bottom of your ears. So that goes in the sort of on the ridge of your ear at the very bottom. And then that hole is going straight through to your ear canal, basically. And that's how it allows the natural sounds, if you like, that are going on around you to pass straight through. So, as I said, quite new, quite innovative, and quite strange. It did take me a while when I first felt these to figure out how to wear them. But once you get the hang of it, they are really nice. They fit really nicely and they're really comfortable. And they come in a little case as well. They come in a little case that charges the earbuds. So the case, if you've ever felt an Apple AirPods case, if you think of that, but slightly shorter in length and slightly chunkier, it kind of feels like that. Or if you've never felt an AirPods case, you could think of it as a bit like a ring box. So the sort of small case that you might get a ring in or a piece of jewellery. And there's not a huge amount to the case, really. On the front of the case, there's a little button that you press and that flicks up the lid. And then inside that, once the lid's opened up, you have two compartments. So, you know, one for the left earbud, one for the right. And they just slot in there very nicely. On the back of the case, there's a little pairing button, which you press when you want to connect the link buds to a new device. And then next to that, there's a USB-C port for charging the case. So you charge up the case using any USB-C cable. And then when the link buds are in the case, that will then charge those up. And you can see the battery level of the link buds themselves and the case in the Sony Headphones Connect app, which leads me quite nicely onto that app, actually. So you do have to download that app to pair these and connect these up. I would say it's 90% accessible with VoiceOver. I've only tried this on iOS. But it's with VoiceOver, there's a few unlabeled buttons, a few unlabeled images, and the layout of the settings is a little bit confusing and it takes a bit of getting used to. So it is usable, but there's just a few small quirks with it, and I will be feeding back to Sony and hopefully they'll resolve those issues. But for now, it could be better, but it's not horrendous. And, you know, changing the settings is doable once you get used to it. So I mentioned this has got some fairly advanced controls and some advanced features, and I will come on to the sound quality in a minute because obviously that's the most important thing of these. But just to mention a few little nice things that it has and that you can customize in the app. So on each of the earbuds, you can double and triple tap the earbud to perform various actions. And you can have the left and right earbuds do different things as well. So some of those settings, you've got play pause. So a double tap on the earbud that you've set would toggle between play and pause. And on that setting, a triple tap would do next track as well. So that would take you to the next track. You can have next and previous, so double tap would be next track, triple tap would be previous track. Volume control, so you could have a double tap would raise your volume and a triple tap would lower the volume. And you can have a double tap invoke your voice assistant as well if you want. So you can only have one of these set at any one time, obviously. But you could have, for example, double tap in the left one would play and pause, and triple tap in it would be next track, and then double tap in the right earbud would be raise the volume and triple tap would be lower the volume. So you can be sort of flexible with them and just change those settings how you would like them to be and what suits your use case the best. Another feature that's really nice is adaptive volume control. I find this works really well for me because I primarily got these for use with Soundscape, and I use Soundscape all the time when I'm on my commute to work, which is through the centre of Manchester, which, as you can imagine, at half eight in the morning traveling through centre of Manchester, it's pretty busy. There's a lot going on. Whereas my area, when I first step out of my house, is pretty quiet. The whole idea of adaptive volume control is that it will adjust the volume based on the ambient noise that is going on around you. So if you're in quite a quiet area, it will automatically set it to quite a low volume. But then as soon as it detects that you've gone into a louder area, so say there's traffic noise or there's a lot of people around, it will recognize that and it will automatically increase your volume. And I found this to work really, really well. It's not 100% accurate. I found sometimes it doesn't always increase it enough, but it does work well and it's saved me from having to fiddle around with my volume settings as much as I normally would. So that works really well. And then In terms of sound, because seems we're talking about volume, we may as well come on to the sound. I found these to be very, very good for spoken word things. So things like podcasts, things like audiobooks, listening to voiceover, listening to things like Soundscape, which is the main reason that I bought them. But listening to your apps, you know, Blind Square, Soundscape, Good Maps, Apple Maps, whatever it may be, they're absolutely fantastic for that kind of use case. Not the best for music, in my opinion. But I think that's just because of the design of these. You know, these weren't designed to be able to immerse yourself in the music. These were designed to allow you to listen to what's going on around you, as well as being able to listen to some kind of, you know, audio from your smartphone. So, you know, not great for music. It's not to say music is bad, but there's just not much depth to it. You know, there's not much bass. So if you like that kind of thing, if you like to, you know, be able to really hear your music in detail, these won't give you that. But, you know, it is bearable on these. Obviously, I can't really demonstrate the sound here. I can't really demonstrate the quality of the headphones themselves. But one thing I can demo, which I recorded earlier, is the built-in microphone on these, which should hopefully give you a little bit of a flavour of the kind of quality that you gain. So have a listen to this. Now, it's important to know that the microphone on these sorts of earbuds is never going to be great because it's just built into the earbud somewhere. It's not a proper microphone that you pull down and make sure that it's close to your mouth, so it's a little bit of a distance away. And just because they're wireless, you've got the general processing and compression that Bluetooth is doing to your audio. So I wouldn't use this for, you know, something where you really need good quality. You know, I wouldn't use it for recording a podcast, for example. Although I know I'm saying that as I'm recording a podcast, but, you know, I wouldn't use it for some sort of recording where you need it to be, you know, really decent. But if you were just doing a phone call or a call to Be My Eyes or Ira, or even if you just wanted to record yourself a quick note, a quick voice note while you're out and about, this would be more than good enough. So that's the microphone on them, the built-in microphone. And I've done a few calls on these while out and about, and I've been told that the sound quality is incredibly clear. I mean, I've been able to hear the caller absolutely fine. And from what they've told me, they've been able to hear me fine as well. And it seems to do a good job of filtering out things like, you know, traffic noise going on around you and even things like wind. You know, wind can be a bit of a nightmare on these sorts of earbuds, but apparently it filters them out very nicely. And a quick note on Soundscape, because I keep coming back to this, but this was the main reason that I bought them. These headphones weren't designed for the blind or partially sighted, but Sony have clearly recognised the benefit of this kind of design, and they've recognised that it can be useful because they have worked with Microsoft and with the team behind Soundscape to add support for head tracking. So if you're a Soundscape user, you'll know the way the beacon on Soundscape works, where it goes off the direction that you're facing. And most of the time, you can use this without a head tracking headset, but it's not quite as accurate. But there are sensors in the Link Buds that give it the, you know, support for head tracking directly. So it's not going off the orientation of your phone, it's going off the orientation of the Link Buds, and it massively enhances the experience of Soundscape. I had this previously on my Bose Frames. I had the ones of them that supported the head tracking, but to me it just felt a little bit clunkier, you know, having to carry the sunglasses around. Whereas these, when you're not using them, I mentioned that case earlier, that little charging case, they just fit. That case just fits very nicely in your pocket. They slot into the case. They've got the added benefit of, while they're in the case, they're being charged up. So, you know, you've always got that little battery boost. And yeah, I've been very impressed with these. So that's the Sony Link Buds. I find these really interesting and they've improved my experience massively with Soundscape in particular. As I said, not the best for music, but if you just need to listen to your GPS app or you want to listen to something that's, you know, more spoken word, these would be absolutely perfect. These cost around about £149 to buy directly from Sony, but they're also available on Amazon and most other retailers, and if you shop around you might find them slightly cheaper. So that's the Sony Link Buds. Hope you found this useful.
Callum Stoneman there with a demonstration of the Sony Link Buds wireless earphones. Tasneem Arshad, what earphones do you use?
a variety, actually. So wired, Bluetooth, and overhead as well. I particularly like ones that don't have those sort of gel tip bits in, because that's not something they, I find they quite irritating in my ears. The Bluetooth ones that I use, there's some very basic ones that are called Happy Plugs, I think. They've got a nice audio on it. They're fairly simple to use. And I would use those for, you know, playing music or being on my iPhone. The overhead ones I use for work, because I find them, you know, that you can just plug them into the PC and they're more effective. And I'm not aware of any Bluetooth ones that are compatible with Windows. So I don't know if anybody is aware of that. That would be very interesting, but I'm guessing there's going to be lags with that if that's the case. So wired ones are particularly best for work purposes, I find. And then Bluetooth more for, you know, when I'm traveling out and about or at home. And it just depends on whether I want the wired experience with maybe using Apple earphones or other brand earphones, or whether I want to use the Bluetooth one. So I use a mixture of all three, depending on which situation I'm in.
I always worry about Bluetooth headphones when I'm out and about. You know, will they fall out my ears and then will I be able to find them again? Also, can I hear what's going on around me? Some earphones now have this kind of pass-through transparency feature that try to let you hear what's going on around you. My wife has some of those Bose frames. They're a bit like sunglasses where they've got speakers in the arms. And so there's actually nothing covering your ear. There's just a little directional speaker. Callum Stoneman, I mean, just thinking more broadly, you've demoed the Link Buds there, but what really informs your decision when you're choosing a new set of headphones?
Well, for these, it was a bit different, to be honest, because normally it's sound quality. And for me, a good balance is sound quality, but I don't like noise cancelling. You know, the sound, like the noise cancelling headphones where it completely shuts out what's going on around you. I don't like that. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a blind thing, but I just feel like as soon as my natural environment gets kind of cut off, I just suddenly feel like, I don't know, like I'm missing something. Like, you know, someone could be shouting at me, or someone could be talking to me, or there could be an alarm going off or something. All sorts kind of start going through my head at that point. So for me, my general kind of day-to-day use ones, if I'm just listening to music, are the Apple AirPods. I've got the AirPods second generation, and obviously they're wireless. But yeah, similar to Tasneem, in terms of, you know, when it comes to being productive, when it comes to work, I would always go wired, because, you know, you've got that lag with Bluetooth. And I find that on the iPhone, it's not too bad nowadays. It's getting better with, you know, the kind of Bluetooth 5 technology and things like that. But with these, with the Sony Link Buds, what informed my choice was the support for Soundscape and just the kind of interesting design of them. Because I was using the Bose frames. I love the Bose frames as well. But what I found with them was when I was taking them to work, I've got about an hour and a half on a bad day commute to work there and back. And I was using them all the time on that commute with Soundscape. And one, it was a bit clunky having to take the glasses with me, because then you've got to, they're not as easy to store away. You know, you can't just slip them in your pocket like you can with these. And also I just found the battery life just wasn't quite enough. You know, I found that it would get me kind of halfway home, which was fine. I could still get back, but then I'd have to charge them again. They're a great product, but, you know, they just weren't quite enough for me. Whereas these Link Buds, I mean, they just come in that little case which charges them. You just slip that in your pocket. And it was that informed my choice, really. I was looking for a better fit with the Soundscape. I wouldn't use these for music, to be honest.
I've got some headphones from a little-known brand called Status Audio, and they provide me with the best of both worlds. One of the things that bothers me sometimes when you pick up headphones, you know, do you know always which way round they're supposed to go? Now, with the in-ear type, you can tell because they're, you know, shaped in a certain way quite often. But with overhead headphones, you know, it's useful sometimes to have those tactile markings to show you which is the left and the right. And I think Sennheiser used to do this as well. They put a little R and a little L on the outside. These have got that on the inside. They're Bluetooth, they've got noise reduction, they've also got the pass-through thing, and I can also use them wired as well. So they kind of tick a lot of boxes, but they did cost a little bit more and they sound great as well. So we'd love to hear what headphones you are using and whether you have any particular considerations when it comes to maybe screen reading or using accessible GPS apps or something that is perhaps specific to being, you know, blind or partially sighted. What informs your headphone decision making when it comes to buying a new set? We'd love to hear from you. So drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Still to come on Tech Talk, we'll be hearing from Colin Shales about push-button smartphones, and we're going to learn about VI gaming.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Aaron Danvers Dukes is a visually impaired gamer, and he joins us next to chat about his experiences of accessible gaming.
Access to gaming can be a bit of a minefield. There are, of course, specialist titles that are created for blind and partially sighted people. However, some mainstream gaming titles for game consoles and desktop machines and laptop machines, well, they're also accessible too. And our next guest, Aaron, let's get you to introduce yourself.
I am Aaron Danvers Dukes. I am a totally blind person. And I do indeed enjoy gaming and technology.
And thank you so much, Aaron, for joining us here at Tech Talk. Have you always been into gaming?
Yes. Ever since I was a child, I was introduced to the PlayStation in the 90s. And I think my first gaming memory is Tekken, the fighting game by Namco, released in 1995.
Wow. So Tekken, so that's a mainstream gaming title. So that wasn't designed with totally blind gamers in mind, presumably.
No, it wasn't.
So how did you play that?
Well, it's a fighting game. So a lot of fighting games are one-on-one. You don't really have to do much walking around, and Tekken kind of worked with it. I mean, when I was much younger, I used to do a lot of what we call button mashing, where you just press the buttons and hope for the best. But now I do sort of try to learn things a bit more. So on a fighting game, it's just you mostly on a left to right plane. So you don't have to go up and down. It's mostly left and right. And you can then do special moves or punches or kicks and attack the opponent in various ways.
And that started you on your gaming journey, as it were.
Indeed, it did. From there, I just kept playing video games, too many to name really. I kept on, you know, I was introduced to amusement arcades. My dad took me to the arcade every Saturday when I was younger. So I was introduced to a bunch of titles, a lot of side-scrolling sort of beat-em-ups, which are a bit different to fighting games. And I was introduced to pinball. And of course, the little coin-operated rides that rock back and forth and play music. I used to enjoy those a lot as well.
So what types of games would you say are perhaps most accessible for blind and partially sighted people?
It depends. It depends what people are looking for. These days, things are changing. Mostly fighting games seem doable, but with the advances in technology and awareness, there's been a few new types of games made available. A very interesting example is Madden. So Madden 21 is doable. EA were in contact with some advocates in the US, I believe, and they added text-to-speech to some of the menus, and they added rumble cues. The ball has different sort of cues if you're doing a long pass or a run, and you can feel what's happening. And they were designed for the blind and deaf. I think it's really quite cool.
Okay, so the games that have those cues, are they audio cues or haptic cues? How do those work?
So in Madden, it's a mixture of audio and haptic. On the PS5 version, they've added the playbooks. So when you pick what you want to do, that now reads. So I'm very intrigued.
So given, you know, the hoops that you have to jump through and the learning curve and the fact that, you know, some games are sort of partially accessible, can a mainstream title that's really designed for a mainstream sighted audience ever really be truly fully accessible for somebody who is blind or partially sighted?
Yes, there's definitely one so far, but there could be two. The very first mainstream game that's been made accessible was The Last of Us Part 2 on the Sony PlayStation 4. They added text-to-speech, they added audio cues for aiming, they added navigation assistance, but it's done through a button. So you press, in this case, you've got the analog stick and you press the left stick in. You keep tapping it and it acts like a sonar. But instead of you following it, it points you. It says, it's like you press the button and it says, okay, you can move. Then you move and it points the camera where you need to go. And then you keep pressing the button and it will constantly point you in the direction of the next story objective. There are cues for when to interact. It's absolutely amazing. It's one of the only games really that can be sort of done on a console from start to finish with no sighted help in terms of a fully accessible game.
Clearly you've put quite a bit of time and effort into figuring this stuff out, which might not come intuitively to others. I mean, do you play any specialist games that are designed for blind and partially sighted people or not really?
Yeah, I'm actually a moderator on the audiogames.net forum. So I play quite a lot of the latest audio games. And it's interesting. The scene is sort of, it's still going, but there are some games we've lost. I'm gutted that Papa Sangre and Papa Sangre 2 and The Nightjar and Audio Defense, they are iOS games, or were some of the best games, very immersive games, and they are no longer available on the App Store. I'm very gutted. They were some of my favorites. But I've been playing audio games since, I guess, 2004,
right,
whereby I was introduced to things like ESP Pinball from ESP Softworks. And these days, we're still going. One of my favorite current ones is actually a few people are making mods of mainstream games. A very good example of this is Hearthstone Access, which is by one guy. And he's just spent his time working on this mod for Hearthstone. And we can play online ranked, online casual. We can play against the computer. We can't do all the solo adventures, but hopefully that might be coming. But he's spending his own time on that, so it's hard to say when or if they will be added. But that's definitely one of my favorites right now.
So there's a heck of a lot going on. So whatever kind of device you've got, there's going to be something out there that you can play if you are looking for a game. I remember growing up, I used to play these sort of interactive fiction type games, you know, where you type in the directions. And I remember the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Zork and those
the
things.
Yeah. Fish. Yeah. You had to put fish in ear.
All that kind of thing. That kind of thing. That's right. Yes, indeed.
Good memories.
Yeah. And then I remember some audio games. I think there's Space Evaders for Windows.
Rocky Space Invaders for a couple of
Rocky
years.
I used to play that a bit with my son. I've got quite a low boredom threshold for games. My wife is forever playing Dice World, of course. Aaron, look, there's a lot of information here and a lot to unpack. If somebody's listening to this and thinking, well, I had no idea there were so many games out there that blind and partially sighted people could play, what would be a good place to start?
So there's a couple of places you can go. Audiogames.net has a database of games, so that's a good place to go. If you're on iOS, a very good site is AppleViz, which has a whole category of games. You go to the app directory and you can browse the games category there, and they have a forum as well. They also have information on how to use a Mac or an iOS device if you're brand new, or if you're an expert. There's podcasts, there's loads of tutorials there as well. So there's Fantastic. Two places that I can think of.
Yeah, so audiogames.net and AppleViz.com.
AppleViz.com, I think so, yes.
Fantastic. Well, Aaron, look, if you want to keep an eye on things for us, and if there are any major developments in the world of accessible gaming, we'd really love to have you back here on Tech Talk.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's been my pleasure.
Accessible gaming, it's a whole scene that I don't really know much about, so hopefully we'll be hearing from Aaron again. Callum Stoneman, are you much of a gamer?
Not really. I mean, I do a little bit. The most accessible games that I remember playing in terms of like gaming from a console, I used to use the Nintendo Wii when that was a thing.
Oh yeah, the Wii Fit. Do you remember that? The mat and the the bowling and the all that, yeah.
Oh, I used to love it. But they were, the Wii Sport range of games, they were really accessible because they had, there was only like five games. I think you got it free when you bought a new Nintendo Wii. It still feels weird calling it a Wii. but I think you got that free, and then there was like five games on it. And there was like tennis, bowling, golf, and a couple of others as well. But they had audio cues for pretty much everything. And, you know, they had different sound effects, and I managed to learn the sound effects and be able to tell what I was doing and what was going on. And actually, I ended up beating most of my family in the end. No one to play against me.
You're more patient than me, Callum, I have to say. Tasneem Arshad, do you play in accessible games?
Yeah, similar to Callum, not the kind of old style, the old Nintendo, minus the Wii Fit. So that was more visually accessible for me because I had a lot more vision earlier on. These days it's more kind of mobile gaming for me, so things like, you know, Blind Legend, there's some of the blindfold games that are specifically designed for blind and visually impaired people, but I particularly love mainstream games that can be made accessible, and, you know, there's a few of those I think around, but not as many as I would like. So I'm hoping that, you know, that's a developing area, and I think developers are much more aware now of having accessibility at the forefront as opposed to it being an afterthought. So I think there's a lot more awareness now around that. But I think there's still a long way to go, but it's much better than where it was. So maybe eventually there'll be a lot more accessibility available for people who are screen reader users, because there's certainly large print built into some of the gaming consoles, but that's okay for people who have some level of vision, but for people who really would be interested in gaming, who need to use and rely on the audio aspect of it, I think there's a lot more that can be done, and I'm certainly really going to be keeping a closer eye on this area. And I think it's important that you know, that there's more females that are you know, that can get involved, and it's not just a male activity.
Oh, you're completely right. I mean, my wife plays many more games than I do. I don't really do any gaming. I got quite a low boredom threshold. You know, my wife is also blind. She's into Dice World, and she's always on Dice World. Every day she plays Dice World and Farkle and Yahtzee and all these things that I don't really, you know, I think I can understand them when I play them, but I just sort of, you know, 10 minutes and I'm done. I'm like, want to go out for a run or something, but she finds that, you know, Dice World very accessible with voiceover. And actually, I think it really helped her when she first got an iPhone to develop her kind of touchscreen skills as well. So actually, gaming can be really useful in terms of skills development, you know, especially for blind and partially sighted people when we're learning to use a screen reader. I'm pretty sure that, you know, my typing really came on when I used to play text adventure games. There's interactive fiction games. I think it's FROTS, is it the emulator that you need? Yeah.
Yeah, you're totally. about that, Dave. And I do love those Frox games as well. And I think that they're really good, the interactive ones. But what I would like to see is just more of the 3D audio choice around. So things like The Blind Legend, which is quite an old game, but you've got things like Audio Wizard as well, which is where you can unlock different hats at different levels and things. So, yeah, I just love the 3D sound on some of these. And the more realistic it is, the more kind of that kind of immersive experience I find very therapeutic, actually.
Yeah, I know Blind Drive is a very popular one more recently, isn't it, with that, for doing, you know, spatial audio and like having everything in, you know, going from, you've got to rely on whether things are coming from your left or right and stuff. Probably, I think it's more of an 18 plus game, Blind Drive, just to be clear, but it's proved very popular.
There we are. Right. So do you play games, specialist games, mainstream games on mobile, on console, on a computer? We'd love to know which games you prefer and why, and how are they accessible. Get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We look forward to hearing from you. And there's probably some terrible dad joke about taking the show to another level, but I wouldn't go there, would I? Smartphones don't have to be controlled with a touchscreen. I know for many blind and partially sighted people, the notion of using a touchscreen, even though they are accessible with screen magnification and screen reading, it just fills some people with dread. It doesn't have to be that way. You can still get phones with buttons, and they do all the good things. Colin Shales knows more. For some blind and partially sighted people, the modern touchscreen smartphone isn't the answer. For many of us, it is, and it works very well. And I was surprised when I discovered that a device whose front is really just a piece of glass is actually fully accessible for somebody who is totally blind. However, we know that 10 years on, for many, it's still difficult, particularly older people. And to help us understand those problems and challenges, and also to help us get a picture of what else might be available, we're joined now by Colin Shales, who is the Technology for Life Coordinator for the West Midlands. Welcome to Tech Talk, Colin. Good to have you with us.
Hello, Dave. Good day to you, and thank you for having me back on.
Anytime. You're very welcome. So just explain a bit more about this problem. Occasionally you receive calls from customers who are struggling with the whole notion of a touchscreen smartphone.
Absolutely. And I'd say it's more than occasionally. It's quite regularly, actually, that I do receive calls from customers who ask me questions like, okay, I'm just starting out. I need a mobile phone. What do I go for? Or they may have heard of a particular brand and type and think that a mainstream option or a touchscreen option is the way to go. And they wonder how on earth they're going to be able to access that. You know, and in other cases, it's upgrading from older tech and older phones, and they just don't know what direction to go in. And I can never recommend one particular device off the bat for a customer. I have to go through their considerations, and considerations can be, the level of their sight and what sort of screen size would they like in a device? You know, how much of that screen are they going to use? Do they have no sight at all? And cost is a big factor when considering new technology. A lot of people just can't afford some of these mainstream solutions because of the cost. What features do they want, and do they want a longer battery life or durability of a phone? Is it going to get dropped? But after those considerations, the main one I'd say is, well, do you want to use a touchscreen or do you want to use a tactile? And I suppose the best way I can sum up the difference between tactile and touchscreen is, with a touchscreen device, which you'd find in most mainstream devices like Apple and Android phones, you do get multi-function functionality. So you're using that same piece of glass on the display to perform multiple gestures. And that's where people can get tripped up a little bit and just not know where to proceed in using their phone. On the flip side, you've got tactile phones. Now, this tends to be associated with more assistive technologies. which I'm going to talk about. Tactile phones are more your traditional candy bar style, which they describe them as, going back to a bit of a throwback back to the early 2000s, when you had your old Nokia phones and you've got a screen essentially, and then the buttons underneath. You've got your, you know, your keypad with your numbers, you've got a couple of option buttons and directional buttons, and that's really, you know, the simplicity of that. Each button performs one function and users can easily, they know what they get, what to expect from pressing each of these individual buttons.
We'll talk about some of these specific products in a second. Why do you think some people really struggle with touch screens? What's the big barrier there?
I think in some cases, it's actually perception of using such a device. A lot of people don't want to get into kind of learning the gestures, or are scared to use the gestures because they feel like they're going to mess up because there's no tactile sense. They're just using a swipe with their finger and there's no visual, and in most cases, touch feedback to show that there's something happening. You have to rely on the screen reader or your braille to indicate that something's happened. And a lot of gestures can be quite complicated. And if it's someone with dexterity issues, maybe it's a senior, they don't get necessarily get on with touch gestures, and just feel like they don't work for them and just want that kind of reassurance that what they're touching clicks and something presses and then something happens. And I think that's one of the biggest things I find when having these conversations.
It's a bit of a learning curve, certainly. There are other ways of controlling touchscreen phones, of course. You can use voice control, you can use keyboards. Are either of those an option for some folk?
Yes, they are. And a lot of people don't realise that they can actually turn a touchscreen phone into something that's a tactile experience by simply connecting a Bluetooth keyboard. You know, we offer a large print Bluetooth keyboard for iOS users, for example. And there's also the Revo keyboard as well, which offers like a keypad and navigational experience. So they can actually not just type in their numbers and characters into messages or dialing a phone number, but also navigate voiceover on an iPhone, for example, or talk back on an Android without having to use touchscreen gestures. And like you said, with voice dictation, smart assistants are getting a lot better now. So Google Assistant and the Siri voice assistant, you can ask to perform a lot of commands nowadays in order to get functionality out of your touchscreen phone. So it minimalizes the amount of touching that has to be done on a touchscreen phone. So you've got those options to you if you do go down the mainstream route.
Yeah, but obviously with an external keyboard, that's something else to carry. It's something else to charge. And with voice control, your mileage may vary depending on how much background noise there is, or perhaps you want to get the phone to do something that you'd rather not share with everybody in your environment. So there are good reasons why you might want to just have one device that you can control with physical buttons. So let's explore some of those options then, Colin. You've identified a few.
Absolutely. And as you say, you then turn towards assistive devices, which are specifically designed for people with low vision and blindness. And in a lot of cases, these devices are designed and created and developed by people who understand and have visual impairments, or collaborate with you know, establishments like the RNIB to produce these devices. So I've kind of picked four main devices or four companies, you know, that offer these assistive phones. And I'll start with the most basic option, and that is the Emporia. So there's two Emporia phones, the Comfort and the Talk Active. So these really are the simplest to use type of device. It's a basic 2.2-inch clamshell design. So you fold the phone in half, like a bit like a flip phone. The Talk Active has voice assist built into it, so you do get that screen reader functionality, but essentially it's a phone that makes and receives phone calls, makes and receives text messages. Very basic functionality. There isn't any internet features built into these phones. And, you know, it's for people who just want to go out and have that assurance of the phone speaking to them. And importantly, it has a tactile keypad as well that's got raised, defined buttons to feel.
And that 2.2-inch refers to the screen size, presumably.
That's the screen size, absolutely, yes. So once you open the device, you have a 2.2-inch screen on the top half and then a keypad on the other half at the bottom.
That's quite a small screen, 2 inches. How easy is it to see? Is it more about the buttons than the screen?
It is more about the buttons, and it's for users, I would say, of low vision, who, you know, have some sight to be able to kind of get those visual references, but can use it as a phone without sight, just with the voice assist built into that. So it will speak the menus, it will speak the keys that you press to give that feedback. It will tell you your incoming text messages and phone calls, and yeah, when you dial out as well.
And can you plug headphones in if you wanted to listen to those text messages in private?
It might have a 3.5 jack. Yeah, we'll have to find out on that. Maybe down the line, Dave, I can give you a demo of some of these devices.
That'd be great, yeah. So that's the Emporia, that's the Comfort, did you say?
There's two. So the Comfort has feedback on keys. So when you press the dial, when you're dialing a number, it will speak the keys. Whereas the Talk Active has the full voice assist screen reader built in. So that's the main difference between those two. So the price of the Emporia Talk Active is £125, and that can be purchased from the RNIB.
And we should say that that's an outright price. So you're actually, you own the phone at that point. You don't have to pay for it with your tariff. So you could just get a SIM-only deal where you get the card, put in the phone, and your phone shop should be able to help you with putting that card in.
Absolutely, yes.
Excellent. Okay, so they're the two offerings from Emporia. What else have we got?
Okay, so next, a very popular option, which is the Blindshell Classic 2, which a lot of people may have heard of. And for those who haven't, it's a very deceptive offering, actually, because it's essentially an assistive technology device, a fully featured candy bar style phone again. This one doesn't flip, so it is actually more akin to the old Nokia devices, where you've got the around a 4-inch screen on top and then a keypad underneath. But it's disguised as a feature phone, but it's actually got smartphone features built into it. And I'll talk about some of those features. But just to describe the phone, it sits nicely in your hand, has really nice defined raised tactile keypad. The Blindshell Classic 2 has been massively improved from the previous offering. They've really listened to users and made those improvements based on the feedback received. So really nice improved keypad that's color contrasting against the body of the phone. As I say, it's fully featured, so you do have internet features built in there, obviously making and receiving calls and text messages, email facility. Now, the phone can be controlled by voice activation as well, so you can control features, you can dial numbers and dictate text as well in text messages using the voice commands button. Some other noteworthy features, there's a built-in torch in the Blindshell Classic, an LED flash torch. There is the headphone jack on that one. And they've also got an interesting button, a dedicated or a programmable quick launch button that's built into the side of this device. So you can actually launch some of your favourite apps. And I'll talk about apps in a minute. It also has a dedicated SOS button for anyone who wishes to program that in with someone they want to contact in emergencies or perhaps just quickly. And it also has built in NFC. Now, NFC is near field communication, which is a wireless technology built in and can connect to a couple of devices that Blindshell also offer, which I find really interesting. So one's called the Beeper, which essentially is a little tile device, a bit bigger than a 50 pence piece, I would say, not quite as flat, but can fit easily fit into a wallet or as a key ring on your keys. Now it connects to the Blindshell Classic 2, and you can actually contact this Beeper. So if you've lost something around your home, like your wallet or your keys, or something else that you attach this little tag to, it will find that for you by playing a melody on the little tag, which I find really interesting.
Do we know how far away that'll work?
I don't know the range of that one, Dave. That's something I'm not too sure about. So another thing we need to have a look into. Also, NFC tags. So these essentially are little stickers which have some sort of chip built into them, a bit like the kind of chip you get on your credit cards. Now, that sticks to anything at all, whether that's a food packaging label or essentially anything at all. Now, when you bring the Blindshell Classic close to these tags, they will then read what that tag is. So you pre-program it to be the label of the item that you've stuck it to.
A bit like PenFriend.
Exactly, just like the PenFriend, and you bring it right up to the tag and it will speak that item to you. So those are some brilliant features of the Blind Shell Classic 2. Very popular for an assistive technology phone. As I say, it's got the App Store, and this is interesting because they've made various apps accessible to users of this phone, things like Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp Messenger, and there are many more communication and productivity apps available in their App Store that are accessible. So as I said, it's a smartphone essentially disguised as a feature phone. So anyone wanting additional features, it's fully accessible, it's fully voiced, and you can use your voice commands to speak items, dictate text, and launch applications.
Yeah, and to be fair to Blind Shell, it's really kind of come on, hasn't it, since the first generation of Blind Shell phone, which I think it's fair to say was very much a version one product. And it does feel now like the Blind Shell Classic 2 has matured quite a bit.
They've really taken on board feedback from their users, I'm hearing. So that's really good to see. So that device is will soon be available, I'm told, at the RNIB. Not quite at the moment. I think within the next couple of 3 weeks. It can be purchased from VisionAid Technologies, I believe, at £379. Comes in two colours, so you can get a nice red body with the black keys or a black body with black keys. So if you really want that contrast in your low vision, I would recommend the red model for that one.
Okay.
Another one that sometimes comes up, I won't talk about this one too much because the features are very akin to the Blind Shell Classic. And the one I'm mentioning now is the Mini Vision 2, which is sold at Sight and Sound Technologies. It's the same price at £379. It's possibly slightly smaller than the Blind Shell Classic, has a slightly more kind of rounded feature to it. Now, all the features are the same, so you'll get the fully voiced voice guide on there, the screen reader, the ability to customise text to make that larger. You also have things like the flashlight and the headphone jack. So very, very similar. You don't get the NFC, I believe, and you don't get the ability to connect to a beeper, which is one thing the Blind Shell does have over the Mini Vision. But it's a very nice looking phone. Again, very high contrast keys. It's a silver or white body with black keys. So very easy to see, and they look very defined as well. So easy to touch and feel.
You know, it's marvellous, isn't it, that we've got so many options now available? Because I remember, you know, it wasn't that long ago when we were sort of scratching our heads a little bit. If somebody said to you, oh, I want a push-button phone that's going to be accessible, and you'd be thinking, you might be out of luck there. But we've got a couple of from Emporia. We've got the Blind Shell Classic 2. We've got the Mini Vision there. Good few options for people.
You know, and it's fantastic that we do have more options today. So, yes, very similar features on a couple of these devices, and I'm sure there are others out there. These are kind of the most commonly talked about, and certainly some that I will talk about as well with customers. Be rude to not mention a landline option as well, and a very good company is Swiss Voice. So Swiss Voice have quite a few different models of landline phone, usually the Extra range, which is XTRA, and one noteworthy model I sometimes mention is the 1150 or the 1150, which is a landline large button phone with a good display. It's not a full screen reader, but it will repeat back the keys that you press just for a bit of confidence. It's hearing aid compatible, has a very loud speaker, I think it was 80 plus decibels, and an answering machine feature. The one kind of standout feature for me was the 6 programmable picture buttons, so you can potentially put 6 actual photographs of your family and friends onto these 6 dedicated buttons, program in their number, and then when you pick up the receiver, you can simply press one of those family members and it will call them straight away. So that's one good standout feature. And Swiss Voice, very, very good brand, and the models tend to be very sturdy.
Excellent. Is that available from RNIB?
We have a couple of models on the RNIB store. I should know what those two models are. I'm very sorry I don't.
But it's the 1100 has got the voice.
The 1150 has the voice. There are many other models, including wireless versions, like the old cordless, I should say, phones, and corded desk phones. So you could view the full range from swissvoice.net. And as I say, there are two models available at the RNIB shop.
Well, Colin Shales, thank you so much for guiding us through that range of accessible push-button phones. And hopefully, if you are not attracted by a touchscreen phone, then one of these might just fit the bill. Colin, if anyone wants to follow up with yourself or your colleagues from the Technology for Life team, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best way, we could speak directly, and if anyone would call 0303 123 9999. Alternatively, you can email our team, which is tfl@rnib.org.uk.
Colin Shales from Technology for Life, thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave.
That's it for this time on Tech Talk. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you, whether it's about headphones or gaming or something else. Drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Taz Niemarscheid, are you off to play an accessible game now?
I think that's exactly what I'll go and do, yes. Thank you.
Excellent. We look forward to hearing you next time. Callum Stoneman, are you sticking with those Link Buds, or are you going to go back to your Apple AirPods?
Well, it depends. I've got nowhere to go after this, so I'll probably stick to the AirPods for now.
There we are. So Callum is lost in music, and yeah. We look forward to hearing a smart speaker review at some point as well. Excellent. Tasneem, Callum, thanks again. And from myself, Dave Williams, bye for now.